Hello, I'm Liz Loza, and welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Forecast presented by Planters, satisfying your snack cravings for over 100 years. Do you know what satisfied me today? Well, you don't, because you're not me, but I'm going to tell you, and it was having a plumber come safely with a mask on into my house and fix my shower, which now has a glorious amount of pressure and can fully drown out any of the weeping that I am doing when I am in there in advance of me having to homeschool my first grader. Andy, what about you today?
I am satisfied to be getting actual lineup questions like a normal, like as if it were a normal year, 2020. I'm like all of a sudden they came in a big wave today. I'm getting all sorts of sit start questions. It really felt like the normal rhythm of a football season. It's pretty awesome. All the old customers are back.
Well, that does feel nice. What usually satisfies me, though, I'm surprised that that's your answer, is because what usually satisfies me is you just replying with, hey, I pinned my rankings to the page, big guy. So you can just check that there.
I do a little bit of that, but I only do it when they ask like a same position question, right? Like if you're, I don't know, if you're asking me Emmanuel Sanders versus Golden Tate, like I rank all the receivers together, whatever. You want to ask me a flex question? I'm here to have a conversation.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite things. But there are a lot of things heading into this season, a lot of unknown things. But we're going to talk about one big thing each per matchup. We're going to go through the entire Sunday and Monday night slate. Remember, there's two games on Monday night. And we're going to start with the early games on Sunday, Cleveland at Baltimore. Andy, we could find more than just one big thing here, but what is most intriguing, exciting, whatever to you in this matchup?
Yeah, I feel like the Browns and Ravens have like, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 big things that we could try to isolate. I think I'm going to focus on a mega thing, which is what any of this looks like on the in terms of the Cleveland offense. Like, I don't think this week is going to go well for Cleveland. Maybe who knows? We could be wrong. Things like that happen all the time in week one. I don't think it's going to be pretty for Cleveland, because Baltimore's good. They're good on both sides of the ball. The defense is great. The defensive front is great. They've enhanced it. I don't know. It's not like everything that we see from Cleveland this week is just going to be, you know, that's what it's going to be like going forward. But I want to see what's different about this offense under Stefanski, under Van Pelt. We think we're going to see a lot more two tight end stuff. There's been a little bit of late buzz about Harrison Bryant, rookie tight end, mm-hmm. who's been running ahead of David Njoku. Kind of interested to see that. We got to see what the Chubb Hunt mix looks like. What are they going to do to, like, is Baker Mayfield going to be under duress constantly again? And is he going to react poorly to it? Like, I just want to see what Cleveland's offense looks like under yet another new coaching staff.
I do think it's important to remember that Cleveland did beat Baltimore in their first matchup last year, right? And that was because Nick Chubb got going. And you mentioned Stefanski, and you mentioned the shared backfield and Kareem Hunt signing an extension. To me, I am very, from a fantasy perspective, interested to see how this backfield shakes out and if they can, in fact, noting that the running back is such a position of rhythm in terms of need, right? In terms of getting going. And I think Chubb is one of those runners who does, all of these rushers tend to benefit from rhythm, but Chubb a little bit more than most because he is such a pure rusher. And when you look at Baltimore, though, and they've added Calais Campbell, it's like the Ravens have gotten better, if that was even possible. Yeah. Like, how can they not be better? So it'll be interesting to see if the rushing attack, which has to be prioritized since that's what worked last year against Baltimore, will be as effective under Stefanski, what the division of touches is going to be. And again, against a theoretically bolstered run defense and D-line, oh my goodness. I mean, what do you even imagine? Would you take the over or under on this game? The point total right now is set at 47.5.
Yeah, I mean, I think Baltimore can get you to 30 in this game, can get you past 30 in this game. So I might like the over here. I love what you said about Chubb last year against Baltimore, because he did have just an absolute supernova game against against the Ravens, like 160 yards and three touchdowns, something like that. And then when Hunt was in the mix, he was totally quiet. It was like a typical 40 yard, you know, half the workload sort of game. So desperately hope that we don't see that.
Indianapolis and Jacksonville. Jacksonville, who's hosting this matchup, definitely not better on defense like the Ravens. In fact, devoid of a defense, which should make Phillip Rivers, who is the obviously new quarterback in Indianapolis, feel quite good. I'm going to go first on this one and say it's similar to what I said about Cleveland, in that I'm interested to see the division of touches between Jonathan Taylor and Marlon Mack. Now, I think the fantasy community and certainly football Twitter has already anointed Jonathan Taylor as the RB1 by, you know, a 60% margin. He is a rookie. It is week one. This has been an offseason like no other. If, however, he does touch the ball 60% of the time, then you have to imagine that it is that, if not more, moving forward.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's the story. We could say a handful of other things on the Jacksonville side. Obviously, they have a crazy backfield shakeup over the last couple of weeks. But the fantasy story here, no question about it, is the division of workload between Jonathan Taylor and Marlon Mack. And it's one of those complicated things. I was comparing it today to the Chester Taylor, Adrian Peterson season, like Adrian Peterson's rookie year, which is maybe an unfair comp for Jonathan Taylor. But they share some similar traits, right? They're both like, they both had, especially young AP, just had track speed, like really fast, obviously really strong, similar players in a certain respect. And the other guy, like Marlon Mack's pretty good. He's not transcendent good. He's not like Pro Bowl good necessarily, but he was 1,100 yards good last year. And Chester Taylor had been coming off like a 1,200 yard season, did nothing wrong, had done nothing that, you know, that signaled that he deserved to have his job taken away. But there's this massive talent waiting for you in the draft, and you just grab it. It wasn't even a position of need for Minnesota. They did it. And this situation feels just a lot like that. Plus, we have a great O-line in front of them, which is, you know, somebody here is going to roll up incredible yardage totals each week. There is a decent chance that in the first couple of weeks of the season, we see Marlon Mack getting like a 60 or 65% snap share. And then I don't know that Jonathan Taylor can do anything on passing downs at all. I'm not really convinced of that.
Well, Nyheim Hines is in the mix, but I also don't think we're going to need to see a lot from Nyheim Hines given the matchup against Jacksonville's defense,
yeah,
right?
Agree. Like, fully agree.
This is going to be a lot of running in this game.
Oh, sure. One thing about the Jacksonville backfield, I'm pretty excited about James Robinson this week. Chris Thompson is facing a defense that allowed the most receptions to running backs last year, so that's kind of fun too. Chris Thompson,
the new Atlanta Falcons. Thing. There you go.
Yeah,
there you have it. I love the Chris Thompson and I love the James Robinson note, just because he's I know he was in your bold predictions article. He's a spoiler alert, one of my fantasy damage players. Another backfield that is shaken up. But right now, James Robinson, undrafted out of Illinois State, pure power back. Like, that is this guy's game. He doesn't have deep speed, not a whole lot of nuance, lots of vision, lots of power, lots of patience. You would imagine that he would continue, unless he fumbles or does something egregious in week one here, to be the RB1 and then mixing in with Chris Thompson on the passing down. So just keep an eye on that as well. Green Bay at Minnesota. Again, another, you know, you think about Minnesota and you think about the rushing attack. I think the third most rushing plays, Stefanski did last year, a Kubiak acolyte, but obviously acolyte still in Minnesota. And so we're going to see a lot of that field. And then Green Bay's defense, lots of question marks, the run defense, you know, kind of paper tigers is where I would define them or talk about them. They should have been better than they were against the run.
I think the thing that I am most interested here is really on both sides, on the Green Bay side and Minnesota. We got to learn who the number two receiver is for both of these teams. You know, they've clear number ones in Thielen and Adams, and I'm not exactly sure what the target distribution is going to look like beyond that. For Green Bay, it could just be a boring answer. It could be Aaron Jones again. Aaron Jones blew up against Minnesota last year. Had two of his finest games against the Vikings last season. But like, we don't know. There's really sort of a narrow usage situation in the receiving corps for both these teams. There's not even, there's not a receiver on Green Bay's roster outside of Adams that you know, I think should be, like, I don't want to say anything bad about Lazard because I liked Lazard well enough coming out of college. But that's not an NFL team's number two receiver. Like, that's not a good NFL team's number two receiver. I still can't believe that they didn't enhance it through the draft. It's amazing to me. So I think we really need to learn the hierarchy in the receiving corps for both these teams.
And then on the Minnesota side, if we are to believe roster reports, BC Johnson is the number two ahead of the rookie Justin Jefferson, who did lose precious time on the COVID list. So, you know, also being a rookie and in a weird offseason, that's contributing. I am interested to see if Irv Smith pops a little bit. That could be an interesting development, especially given the play calling in Minnesota.
Oh, yeah. No, I like it. If last year is any indication, we'll see BC Johnson play a ton of snaps and not draw very many targets at all and just block other people from having opportunities, I imagine.
That's fair. We'll talk about Miami at New England. This is obviously a hotly contested and a matchup that everybody wants to see. Not so much because of the Miami side. Obviously, Tua isn't starting. It is Ryan Fitzpatrick. But because Cam Newton is going to be the starting quarterback, that's a huge alert. I don't know if you knew that, by the way, in New England. He beat out this kid, Jarrett Stidham, much to Dalton Del Don's dismay. So Cam Newton will be the starter for the Patriots. I mean, that's what I want to see. Like, there could be a bigger point here. I could talk about, like, whether or not N'Keal Harry can get enough separation to matter or at least be forgiven by football Twitter and, you know, see if he can bring down a couple of those 50-50s since that's why he was drafted in the first round. But I want to see Cam. I want to see how McDaniels and Belichick use him. I want to see him run all over the place. I'm not even paying attention to much else.
Yeah, I fully agree. It's so easily the dominant storyline. I mean, I don't want to get lost in the New England backfield here. There's actually not a whole lot of unanswered questions on the Miami side necessarily. I mean, we can wonder a little bit about how Breida and Howard are gonna split touches, but I think it's reasonably well known. Cam is the story. Cam's health is the story. We think he's recovered from the foot and shoulder stuff. There's been a lot of a curious amount of love exchanged between him and Belichick, like through the media, right? Like Belichick is, it's not like he ever says truly glowing things, but this is more praise, I feel like, than we ever generally get from Bill Belichick in and off. So like, it's just been nice and Cam seems happy and Belichick seems happy and Cam couldn't be more pleased with his coaches. And man, if he can move at all like vintage Cam, he's the goal line back, right? Like he's maybe the best goal line runner of his era. He's the goal line back. So all the fretting about New England's backfield is really going to be like, who cares? Because it's Cam's backfield, right? When they get near the goal line, Cam's going to get 8-10 touchdowns. That is certainly what I'm hoping for. If we get that, he's a top 10 quarterback.
And it allows James White to have a really safe, nice floor, like a nice flex option in PPR friendly formats. Because when you think about Christian McCaffrey and Cam, Cam did target him, I believe, 7 times per game over the past 2 seasons. So you have to imagine there's going to be some check down opportunities, which keeps Cam efficient and accurate. And that now has been drilled into his brain. And I think Belichick's just so happy because for the first time in 15 plus years, he has a mobile quarterback, which is one of the only offensive advantages that he's been without for so long. Yeah. So everyone's happy in New England for now. They are traditionally slow starters though. So we'll see how that moves forward.
This is such a great way to break in Cam, by the way. I mean, this Miami defense was so friendly to opposing passers last year. So this is about as easy as it gets. If you can't play Carolina, play Miami.
And you're at Foxborough, so you don't have to worry about travel. Not that you have to worry about fans in the stands, but at least there's no travel. So I think, if anything, this you're totally right. This is a great way to introduce Cam to his new existence.
Yeah.
Let's talk about another mobile quarterback, Russell Wilson. He and the Seahawks are traveling to Atlanta. Everybody, you know, I did a couple of hits on some local Atlanta stations this morning, and everybody wants to talk about Todd Gurley. I think it'll be interesting to keep an eye on Brian Hill, who's the presumed backup behind Gurley, if those knees, which have been rumored to be arthritic, do flare up. I really want to, from a purely selfish standpoint, and I don't have Todd Gurley rostered on many of my leagues, but I would love to see him smash here.
Yeah, yeah, I agree with that. And his usage as a receiver to me is a pretty significant story. I don't have very much exposure to Todd Gurley at all, really. And I feel bad about that. Obviously, Todd Gurley's best seasons were some of the best seasons that we've seen in 10 years, right? Like, they're great. He's clearly some compromised version of, like, vintage Todd Gurley right now. I think that's fairly clear. If they throw to him, though, it would make a huge difference. I mean, that guy wasn't really getting receiving volume last year's 31 catches. Obviously, in his best seasons, it's 50 plus, it's 60 plus. It would be great if he could get back to that range. If he's getting 4 or 5 targets a game, that would make a huge difference in terms of projected fantasy value.
I have him, for what it's worth, fearlessly forecasted for 4 catches. Plus, I have four catches for 32 receiving yards, which I think is pretty conservative. But I also want to see how, like, Hayden Hurst is used and how much Calvin Ridley eats. And so there's a lot of options for Matt Ryan here.
Yeah, 4 catches doesn't sound like a lot when you say it, but that's a 60 catch season, right? Like, that's great. Like, that would be awesome if Todd Gurley is targeted 6 or 7 times and catches 4 of them. That's incredible. That's phenomenal usage for fantasy purposes.
Anything on the Seattle side of the ball?
I mean, the biggest question is what the run pass mix is going to look like, whether Russ is actually going to cook, right? There's a little bit of a question as to how much share, if any, Carlos Hyde really has, how good Chris Carson looks, all that. But, you know, is it just going to be, it's probably just going to be the same old Seattle, no matter what Russell Wilson and literally every Seahawks fan wants to see. They want to see a lot of first down throws. They want to see a lot of throwing. Like, how about we throw in the first quarter of games? How about we do that? But that has not necessarily been what's got them a great deal of success over the years. So we probably won't, but it would be exciting.
48.5 is what the over-under is set at. So a decent amount of passing for a Seattle matchup.
I don't know where I fall on that. This is just going to be such a, we're talking about this a little bit off pod about all the variables that go into this particular off season, the weird practice schedule, the lack of preseason games. Is it, what's going to win out, the fact that nobody's going to be able to tackle, or the fact that offenses mm-hmm. are going to be entirely disjointed? I just don't know. I wish I had a good answer.
Seattle does have continuity.
They do.
Working in their favor there. So that'll be interesting. Vegas at Carolina, two very differently rebuilt teams, teams going through transitions. I have to admit, like, everybody is always down on the Raiders because they've earned that reputation. But I am very hopeful for the Raiders. I like the new look. I like what Vegas is doing in the sports yeah. world. Like, they've got the Golden Knights. Now they've got the Raiders. I'm feeling optimistic about the Raiders, and also the fact that they have these vets like Jason Witten that aren't going to necessarily factor in from a fantasy perspective, but might help create that culture that Mike Mayock wants to talk about, that especially in times like this when you're in Vegas and you're in the middle of a pandemic and you're not in a strict bubble. And so accountability is all the more important. I think having those guys on the team is really, really important to continuity and consistency throughout the season beyond week 1. I'm in love with Bryan Edwards. I'm in love with Josh Jacobs. The only thing I'm frankly not in love with is Derek Carr. But I think I think the pass catchers that he has at his disposal could drag him into production.
Yeah, Derek Carr has, first of all, this is such a fun bad game. Like, this is one of those games that you just, as a fantasy manager, you just love things like this. There's probably going to be a lot of sloppy points here, right? Carolina's defense was poor last season, and it looks much worse this season. So it's a great spot for all your Raiders, pretty much. And I have Bryan Edwards in a handful of leagues. I'm pretty tempted to slot him into a flex spot. Sight unseen, right? We've had no preseason. All we have are glowing reports, not just from beat writers, but from Derek Carr himself. Who knows? Maybe this is just typical quarterback sunshine, but he has dropped some crazy good comps on Bryan Edwards. I'm excited about him. If the Raiders can't all blow up here, when are they ever going to do it? Because again, Carolina's defense just looks miserable. Jacobs is an obvious great start here. The one thing I'll say about Carr is that he is, without necessarily showing that he can be any sort of fantasy factor himself, he can at least support a couple of startable fantasy receivers, right? Like, which is really all we need from Derek Carr in this one. Just feed the ball well to mm-hmm. Bryan Edwards and Henry Ruggs.
And then you'll have it. I just want to add Josh Jacobs, only $26 in our daily game. He's on my roster. The Guru Challenge is happening again via FFL this year. And it's no surprise, he's probably going to be on all of our rosters. But I had to throw that one out from Carolina's point of view. This is a team that is rebuilding, and we will watch it rebuild.
Yeah, everything is new. Like, we've talked about this a lot. Like, both coordinators are new, head coach is new, quarterback is new. Like, it's just a shocking amount of newness in the worst possible offseason to do it. But at least we know who the principals are, right? Like, there's no question that they're going to feed McCaffrey. There's no question that they're going to feed DJ Moore. There's a little bit of an open question about whether Curtis Samuel can rebound and recover some of the shine he had a couple of years ago. But that's about it. I mean, we know where the ball is going to go. We just don't know exactly what the offense is going to look like.
Absolutely. Philadelphia at Washington. There are a couple of things. I'm going to take the Philadelphia side, and why don't you take the Washington side, since there are a few narratives here. From the Philadelphia point of view, it sounds like Jalen Reagor, who was this hot rookie, did a lot of gadgety work at TCU. Nice reports out of training camp until he got hurt, but it does look like he is going to start week one. I would like everyone to remember that he is a rookie, and this was a wild offseason with no preseason. So just because he's going to start in week one does not mean that he is the overlord of the rest of the receivers. This is just not how it's going to work immediately. Evolution, which is a real thing, folks, takes time. So I think that DeSean Jackson is a great play this week. He, in fact, started week one of last season against Washington, his former team, but this isn't even about revenge. This is just about when DeSean Jackson is healthy and he's still got it, you use him. And you're going to want to use him because, like I said, last in 2019, week one, 154 yards, a couple of scores. He was fire. I think he's going to be, he is the healthiest and most experienced receiver on Philadelphia's roster. And this is a person that you are flexing because I'm sure you didn't draft him as anything other than a wide receiver three.
Yeah, I love the call on D-Jax. On the Washington side, we have a couple of big open questions, one of which is obviously what the snaps and touches look like in the Washington backfield. They kind of cleared the deck for Antonio Gibson when they launched Adrian Peterson. So that's exciting. Antonio Gibson has almost no collegiate experience as a traditional running back, which seems like a big obstacle to overcome, right? But apparently not. He's really impressed them. They immediately dropped a Christian McCaffrey comp on him. So who knows? Like, his work at Memphis was spectacular last year, right? Like, a really, really fun player. We see that a fair amount out of Memphis. We do get a bunch of really buzzy players that come out of Memphis because they put up gaudy stats. So we'll see. But especially with Peterson out of the mix, you have to be excited about it. And then I think the other big open question on the Washington side is after Terry McLaurin, where do the targets go? Like, who's the number two here? It's probably Steven Sims. Looks like he's going to start. He's kind of fun. What are we going to see from Logan Thomas, the tight end who's been pretty buzzy? And is Antonio Gibson going to be the number two receiver effectively? Like, do we see plenty of situations in which it's like McKissick in the backfield and Gibson in the slot? That seems possible to me. That would make Gibson super valuable fantasy asset throughout the season.
Well, for what it's worth, McKissick is listed as the RB1 on the depth chart. Whether that holds any real water or not, I almost think that Peyton Barber might be, because again, I like to sometimes look at these situations as which of these things is not like the other, assuming that all the others will cannibalize each other. And so Peyton Barber is your only, true rusher, north-south rusher. You can imagine him on early downs. You can imagine him maybe getting the goal line looks. I don't really want to par. I don't think this offense is prolific or will be prolific enough to support a regular running back unless Gibson has that gadgety value that you're talking about in the passing game. So, but, I don't know if you're in a crazy 16 or a 20 team league like you and you need to roll out a RB3 or a flex. It wouldn't surprise me, Matt Harmon hates this phrase, but to see Peyton Barber fall into the end zone.
Yeah, no, could happen. It doesn't obviously, you know, if you're just the goal line back for the Washington football team, that doesn't really seem like it's going to be a fantasy goal line this
chills.
Year.
My goodness.
Yeah. How about it?
Vapors.
How about it?
That's, Andy, you're giving me the vapors.
That's
you know
probably
who else
not going to
be giving
me
the vapors? I'll tell you, Matt Nagy's giving me the vapors with his Foles, Trubisky. Why you lie to us? This whole mirage, this whole stinking smoke screen. Listen, Pace, I know it's your butt on the line, and that's why Trubisky is starting. We knew this ruse. I'm so freaking angry about the ruse that Foles was going to. No, it's always been Trubisky, because if Trubisky doesn't work out, none of y'all are working out either. I'm obviously talking about the Chicago at Detroit matchup. I don't care. Like, I'm disavowing myself from all of this. David Montgomery is apparently fine. He hasn't, his groin is fine. That's hilarious, by the way. Oh, he's fine now. His groin hurts. Totally fine to just be, you know, to just run up the middle and for 2 yards on a move every single play. It's fine. It's fine. Anyway, you can take over. You're probably
so
level headed about this.
You are as excited as I am to see the Bears just run it back. Because that's apparently what we're doing. We brought in Nick Foles, gave him a fair amount of guaranteed money, and we're just gonna run it back. But I get it. You're right. The reputation and the future employability of the GM is entirely tied to a quarterback who is not, you know, he's not on a great trajectory. He's certainly not on the trajectory of the other quarterbacks taken in the same draft. And we're just gonna have to watch it for 2 or 3 weeks until
talk about a take lock. Like, what an incredible take lock. I mean, I get it, but also then why did we do this? Why did we go through the theatrics of signing Nick Foles and giving him extra money just so that we could obviously roll out Mitch Trubisky in week one on a short leash and then.
Yeah,
eventually
it just kind of dims the excitement up for like I could have gotten myself plenty excited for Anthony Miller. We think he's going to be a thing. There's been a lot of lot of buzz from the coaching staff, from, you know, the player himself is talking about how much, you know, his own level of attention, for lack of a better phrase, to the work that he always should have been putting in, right? Like, he seems more committed to just being maximizing himself as a player this offseason. He's talked about that a fair amount. The coaching staff seems really happy with him. There's nobody else to throw to other than the 45 tight ends they added, none of whom are presumably going to be any good, right? Like, it's going to be Allen Robinson and Anthony Miller. But again, they're tied to Mitch Trubisky, and there's not going to be very many weeks when Mitch Trubisky is able to support two really exciting fantasy wide receivers. So, bit of a bummer. On the Detroit side, the backfield is kind of the story. DeAndre Swift has come back to practice. He's been a limited participant. He is, when fully operational, in my opinion, much better than Kerryon Johnson. Who knows how much Adrian Peterson we see this week, so that's kind of a mess.
We're not going to see much Adrian Peterson. I think Kerryon is the play, but the defense, my gosh, if Chicago's doing anything right, like they are bound to rebound from last year's regression. So
yeah.
I don't want a piece of this backfield. There is a note that Kenny Golladay did have a slight injury. I believe he was getting an MRI, so keep an eye on that, because obviously that would be then Detroit's running it back. Like, here we are again. It's like,
yep,
there's
right.
No progress in the NFC North. All four of these. Minnesota's going to win the damn division. Let's move on. Talk about running it back. Let's talk about the New York Jets and the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, there's not, obviously on the Jets side, there's not really a whole lot to get interested in unless you're a true believer in Le'Veon Bell and the best shape of his life stories and whatnot. I'm not expecting very much on the Jets side. Super excited, though, to see what the backfield mix looks like in Buffalo. I drafted a lot of Zach Moss. These two, Devin Singletary and Zach Moss, seem like wonderfully complementary players. The role that we think Zach Moss can fall into is the better role for fantasy purposes, right? It would be goal line carries, because that was what Frank Gore did last year, and it would be more of a volume receiving role. Singletary, not a particularly impressive receiver last year, seems like a between the 20s runner. He was great. He was super efficient last year. There's a lot to like about Devin Singletary. He's had some ball security issues. I don't know that they're ever going to trust him at the goal line. So it's some combination of Zach Moss and Josh Allen at the goal line. It's a great spot for both players. So I'm really interested in seeing what Zach Moss does. Like, I'm making it sound like I care about Devin Singletary. I have almost no Devin Singletary, and I have a lot of Zach Moss. So I really care about what Zach Moss is doing.
I do think we have to talk about Stephon Diggs a little bit here. I mean, obviously the value in Josh Allen from a fantasy perspective is in his legs, right? Over 500 rushing yards, only one of three quarterbacks last year to do that. But you add Stephon Diggs and you added John Brown. So you had the best ball tracker, arguably, in the league. And then you add one of the best route runners in the league. And it feels like the front office is doing everything they can to pull his passing ability into value, into positivity, into being above average, into accuracy. I have a little feeling like Stephon Diggs was excited to get out of Minnesota. We know that he's not a quiet guy necessarily. I think that if anything, he has been a preseason or a lack of a preseason has saved Stephon Diggs from punching his locker a couple of times because he does not know just how inaccurate Josh Allen is. And that man gets frustrated fast. Like, I might have a temper and not a lot of patience, but he puts me to shame. And I just have a feeling I want to see what happens. I want to see how many looks he gets and if he's satisfied with those, or if we're going to have another situation brewing because he doesn't feel like he's getting the high value targets that he deserves.
There is a certain sort of Josh Allen truther who will tell you that, well, the reason he wasn't a better passer in the frickin' Mountain West is that he didn't have the receivers. And
him now.
So, yeah, that's the thing. Certainly it was true in his rookie season in Buffalo, less true last year with John Brown, Cole Beasley. Like, these are pros and John Brown's a good player. Boy, if you can't make a go of it, if you can't complete, I don't know, 62-63% of your throws when Stephon Diggs and John Brown are your primary receivers, like, it's never going to happen for you as a passer. And I don't know what the next excuse will be. I would actually find Josh Allen somewhat easier to root for if he were the quarterback of my team. I've just never been a believer in him as an NFL level passer. Obviously, most of his fantasy upside is tied to his legs. He's, what is it, 17 touchdowns over his first couple seasons. So, but the open question with him remains, what can he do for you when he's not running for touchdowns? Like, if he has a game where it's just 45 rushing yards and no score, he's never even thrown for 270 yards in the NFL. So he's got to clear that hurdle.
Absolutely. We wanted to say thanks again to Planters, our sponsor for this episode. When you want to satisfy a salty craving, Planters has you covered. Their deluxe mixed nuts are roasted to perfection and seasoned with sea salt, giving you the crunchy texture and enhanced flavor you crave. Stay satisfied with Planters deluxe mixed nuts. All right, Andy, how are you feeling? Do you need a salty snack to get you through the late games, the Sunday night late games and the Monday night games?
If I had a salty snack handy, I would definitely reach for it right now. But I'm good. I'm excited to have the NFL back. I can talk these games.
Well, two salty old dudes are playing each other in maybe the most anticipated matchup on Sunday. It's Tampa Bay and Drew Brees' New Orleans Saints. I mean, there's a million storylines, but I'm going to force you to do it. One big thing.
This is, I think, not a big thing outside of fantasy circles, but I'm excited for Emmanuel Sanders in New Orleans. I think this was a great get. There's not a lot is new in New Orleans, so maybe we're bored with the Saints, who just haven't been able to close the deal the last couple of years, despite having really good teams. They make just a couple of small additions, and one of them is this absolute technician of a receiver who seems like he should just fit flawlessly with the most accurate passer in NFL history, right? Like, this is just a great pairing of player and player, and I'm excited for it. So I don't know what that's going to mean in this one, but this should be a shootout of a game. I'm expecting Emmanuel Sanders to have a whole bunch of weeks where he sees between 8 and 11 targets, and when those are Drew Brees targets, those are invariably big weeks. So I'm pretty low-key excited for Emmanuel Sanders. I don't even have a lot of him in fantasy. I just thought it was such a smart signing. I'm kind of like, is it bad to say that even though the Bucs haven't played a game with Brady as their quarterback, I'm just kind of over it. Like, I'm over the whole Brady Bucs thing. Like, we've been talking about it for so long. I just want to see what it looks like. Cool. Let's go.
I feel exactly the same way. I'm going to save at the end. We're going to do a bold prediction apiece, and mine is about Tampa Bay. So I will save that and we'll move on to Arizona at San Francisco. Manuk Hopkins making his own deal, agentless deal, quietly. I dug that a lot. Yeah. He is set up now to spend the rest of his career in Arizona as Kyler Murray's number one receiver. I want to take a look at that rapport from jump.
Yeah, I agree with that. As I was saying with Emmanuel Sanders, this is obviously a much more high profile case of a team making, you know, especially in this offseason, obviously you want continuity year to year. Arizona basically has that, except they added one of the NFL's very best receivers of the last five years, right? Like it is a big notable addition. Obviously he's a great player, used a little bit strangely last year in Houston. We'll see if that changes. Obviously an exciting player against perhaps the league's best defense. So it's not necessarily a blow up spot for anyone with Arizona, because San Francisco is obviously, you know, unless there's some sort of Super Bowl hangover coming, it's just a loaded defense. So maybe not a monster game from DeAndre Hopkins, but I'm excited to see what the target total looks like and where on the field he is targeted. And then the other thing here on the Niners side is the backfield mix. I'm fairly sure it's going to be a heavy dose of Raheem Mostert in this one. It's the big open question is how much Jerick McKinnon do we get
versus Tevin Coleman?
Yeah, I think Coleman will. I mean, this is just me guessing based on what the most important games of the Niners season looked like. But I would think we're going to get a lot of Raheem Mostert and a rotational dose of Tevin Coleman. It's the addition of McKinnon to this, who could be a pretty exciting third down presence. And I don't know, maybe they just use them all in a straight rotation. That would be a bummer because I think Mostert is a little bit better than the other two. I'm thinking Mostert is going to be a 60-65% of the snaps guy. I hope that's the case, but there is even in a supporting role, there's real upside for McKinnon if they actually throw to him.
I'm interested in the receiving core because the injuries have started to pile up here. Debo Samuel dealing with a foot injury. We're not sure if he's going to play in week one, but even if he does, you have to imagine he's going to be a little bit hobbled. It is a foot injury after all. And Brandon Ayuk, who is this rookie with some great yak appeal, he's a little bit banged up. So assuming both of them are sidelined, and even if one of them plays, you got a hurt rookie and a dude with a bad foot, I think this is an opportunity for Kendrick Bourne, who was used heavily in the red zone.
Yeah.
Over 6 feet tall, perimeter receiver. He's only $12 in Yahoo DFS. So again, if you're looking to throw a little dart or you're in a deeper league and you need a sneaky flex, I think Kendrick Bourne this particular week could surprise.
And obviously we have arguably the league's best tight end going up against the most incredible tight end matchup there was last year, right? Like there's not a better positional matchup than tight ends against Arizona. So it should obviously be a blow up week for Kittle.
My new favorite team, the Los Angeles Chargers, are traveling to Cincinnati. I am in love with the Chargers. I lost my Rams hat. Maybe that was the universe telling me that I needed to switch teams in Los Angeles. I just ordered a Chargers cap. They changed their logo. So perfect timing. They're facing the Bengals, really bad defense. And yeah. I know that you're wildly excited for Joe Burrow and the way this offense has been remade. But I think that like Austin Eckler is going to smash this week. I haven't projected for more total yards than either Saquon Barkley or who else did I have? Someone else below. Alvin Kamara. I think that Austin Eckler is going to do some real work this week. I think Tyrod Taylor is a great underlooked sleeper. Even if Mike Williams doesn't make his way onto the field, you still have Keenan Allen leading him into production. You still have Hunter Henry who can do things in the red zone. And so this defense is a pushover. I think the Chargers start on a high note, which, by the way, the universe owes them at this point.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. You're right that I'm incredibly excited to see what this whole Joe Burrow experience looks like at the controls of an offense that isn't going to be that bad against arguably a pretty frisky defense. But you are also right that there are so many like low key important questions on the Chargers side. Like we haven't seen you know, Tyrod Taylor had his moments in Buffalo as a fantasy quarterback in isolated situations. We've certainly never seen him support multiple absolute must start fantasy receivers. But there's a lot of talent, obviously, on the Chargers roster. We've also never seen him as a sort of high volume check down throw, like, you know, connect with the running back again and again and again. That's obviously key to Eckler's value. It's not the only key to Eckler's value. Eckler is a really good player who is probably going to rack up a lot of yardage in this one. It would be nice to see Tyrod take some of those throws that Phillip Rivers always does, just like the cheap and easy stuff to the running back. We haven't seen a ton of that over the years. So that'll be big. And the other big unanswered question for the Chargers is what the distribution of snaps is going to look like behind Eckler. Because that's actually a lot of touches that Justin Jackson and Joshua Kelly are fighting for. And if all that work goes to one of those guys, that guy's going to be a flex more often than not.
We've made it to Sunday night. We got the Cowboys at the Rams. Vegas thinks this is going to be a high scoring game, which I do find curious, because the last time Dak saw the Rams, I believe he only threw 20 or 25 attempts and had 15 completions. So Kellen Moore being retained as the OC is certainly a commitment to the pass. We know that he's got CeeDee Lamb. You've spent the offseason talking up Blake Jarwin, Amari Cooper and Michael Gallup are also there. The Rams defense is no longer Wade Phillips's, but you still have Aaron Donald. I mean, they just paid Jalen Ramsey a whole bucket, a load of money, a Brinks truck, if there's a callback of money. I guess to me, from a fantasy perspective, from the Rams' point of view, I want to look at that backfield's distribution of touches. Cam Akers is the hot player. Singletary was hot last year and then kind of fell out of favor. He's also, I believe, been dealing with a soft tissue issue. The team inexplicably loves Malcolm Brown. They love him. I don't care if y'all don't love him. The Les Snead loves Malcolm Brown. It would not surprise me if he didn't have a Malcolm Brown tattoo on his arm somewhere or somewhere on his body. Loves him. So I think that, you know, I think the Cam Akers hypers are going to be a little disappointed in terms of number of snaps that Akers sees, but they might be rewarded, because if anyone, any running back on this roster could break off a wildly creative, 40-yard run, it is Akers, because Malcolm Brown ain't doing that.
Yeah, I agree with that. Brown is definitely not doing that, but they, you know, we saw it last year. They kind of like Malcolm Brown around the goal line. So he is just going to exist to really frustrate the people who invested in Cam Akers this season. That seems like that's probably going to happen. We think Henderson's going to play. That backfield is obviously the biggest fantasy story here. I want to say that the last time the Cowboys faced the Rams, the reason that Dak didn't have to throw is that Zeke and then later Tony Pollard just ran all over the Rams. It wasn't even a particularly competitive game. Dallas put up 40 something on them, and Dak didn't have to do a whole heck of a lot of work, right? So I don't think we'll see that again. I am interested to see if we get any. I wound up with Jared Goff,
but
in
why
a lot
not,
of places.
Andy? Why wouldn't we see that again?
I mean, we may. The Dallas offense looks great. I don't have any reason to not think that Dallas can average, 33, 34 points per game this year. Like, the Dallas offense looks great. CeeDee Lamb was a wonderful addition. I would like to think that Los Angeles can make it a competitive game. And Dallas's defense doesn't seem all that fearsome. They've got some injuries. I would like to think that Los Angeles can get to 20 points in the first half. Like, I think this can be a high scoring game, and I think Los Angeles can score with them for a while. I got a lot of Jared Goff, mostly because he was that like reasonable, plausible upside quarterback who fell really late. Nobody wanted to touch him. If you waited at quarterback, he was always there at the end. And he's given us 4,600 yards in each of the last two seasons. So that's not bad. If the touchdowns are there, great. We got to see who he'll throw to outside of the big three of Higbee and Woods and Kupp.
And just remember, the Cowboys no longer have Byron Jones, their star cornerback. The Rams also no longer have Brandon Cooks. So there's that. I do think Robert Woods is an interesting value because of the absence of Byron Jones. And I think he's very reasonably priced in
$16 in our daily game. Yeah.
Monday night, you've got the Steelers and the Giants. Big Ben returning from injury and Daniel Jones. I mean, Daniel Jones just taking over my boyfriend's spot. I don't even care about the Giants anymore. If there's no Eli, why am I tuning in?
Why even bother? Indeed. I was talking about this with Pat Daugherty a couple of weeks ago. Like, Joe Judge just has such a high school coach vibe to me. I don't think I could tolerate, like, I don't know. I couldn't live with that every day for months at a time. I just couldn't. I just don't think I could deal. I would personally not respond well to that. Of course, I'm not a wide receiver or running back, so it doesn't really matter. It just seems like such a strange coaching staff. He seems like such an oddball to me. And then Jason Garrett back on the, like, not on a Dallas sideline is weird to me. Everything, a lot about the Giants is weird. Tough matchup for them overall. Pittsburgh, obviously, a very good defense last year. So this is a... this is a tough opening spot for Saquon Barkley. Obviously, you're starting Saquon anywhere. You invested the number two or three overall pick in your draft in him. You're not gonna sit him or anything like that. But I feel like we learned something about Daniel Jones here, because Daniel Jones, when he had a good matchup last year, like when he had those, like Washington, I think they had a Miami matchup. Like when he got a good matchup, he blew up. It was four touchdowns, and maybe he ran one in, and it was like all of his huge boom weeks were when they should have happened against friendly matchups, and this is not one of those. Like, this is a tough matchup. This is where you would have expected last year's version of Daniel Jones to give the ball away two, three times, not make very much noise, and not really contribute any particularly good days from that receiving core. But like, all the receivers except Golden Tate seem healthy right now, so that's exciting. Tate, I don't have a good vibe on him as of this moment, whether he's going to play. Hopefully you drafted your way in a position where you're not totally dependent on Golden Tate in week one. I think most of us did. So, but other than that, though, like, they're all healthy. Ingram's healthy. Shepard's healthy. Like, they're all good to go. Really tough matchup. So I'm pretty anxious to see what Daniel Jones can deliver here.
I'm also, from Pittsburgh side of things, interested to see who Ben is clicking with. We know he has rapport with Juju. To me, it's the wide receiver too. Deontay Johnson has been the early sleep, you know, he's not even a sleeper anymore, because coming out of last season, he broke out. I think that we are undervaluing James Washington a little bit here. You know, there have been reports out of training camp that James Washington has impressed Ben Roethlisberger. You know, his ability to be the deep threat, especially against a secondary like the Giants. It would not surprise me if, you know, James Washington caught three to four balls for like 80 yards and a score in this one. And Deontay Johnson was held out of the end zone. And all of the truthers are, you know, posting GIFs. Like Simpsons gifts all over Twitter. Like, that would not surprise
me. I love that
me.
Because it would mean that Ben has taken deep shots. And I guess that is the other big open question, is exactly what his arm looked like. Because the last time he played a full season, he averaged 320 passing yards per game, right? It was incredible a couple of years ago. He was fantastic. And a big part of that was his willingness to go deep and the success they had doing it. It was a different, slightly different Pittsburgh receiving core, obviously, with Antonio Brown still having a good year, but it's still a good group of receivers. And again, if his arm is 95% of what it was, this is a really fun team for fantasy.
Last thing is, I think that, and I fell into this trap last year, so this is on me as well. 2020 Eric Ebron is 2019 Dante Moncrief. I won't do it.
It seems like we can probably leave it there. There's been a lot of buzz about Eric Ebron. And he has given us one, obviously, really, really good productive season with Andrew Luck. This is a different environment. The beat writers are sure trying to make him a thing.
Surely. Tennessee at Denver. I like to call this the Jarrell Casey revenge game.
That's it. That's probably the way the Monday night announcers are gonna spin it to us. Sure.
There is a little bit of news. Cortland Sutton, obviously the star receiver for the Broncos, has a sprained AC joint. He hurt himself in practice on Thursday. And KJ Hamler, the rookie that a lot of people were excited about, is also injured. So now, when we went into this season talking about the plethora of options that Drew Lock has at his disposal, and also how confusing the distribution of targets may be, at least in week one, it seems like things have been narrowed a bit. You know, the Fant truthers, hey, you're Iowa Hawkeye, actually, are excited for that. But also Jerry Jeudy has a real opportunity to make an immediate impact as one of the most polished route runners out of this year's draft.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, what a week for Broncos fans, right? Like between the Von Miller news and Courtland Sutton going down on Thursday, just like what a back to back for them. That said, I think Jerry Jeudy can be great. And I think of all the, I think of all the sort of propaganda that we've heard about young players, you know, no preseason this year. Again, we've had to really hone in on quotes that beat reporters are giving us. I think the most like eye popping thing that I heard all offseason was Kareem Jackson saying that he's never seen a receiver get in and out of his breaks like Jerry Jeudy, right? Like that's a player. And I assume he doesn't throw around compliments like that lightly. And it matches up with everything that we saw from Jeudy as a collegiate player. I feel like in some ways he's the rookie that we should have been talking about all along that we haven't been. Like people have been very focused in on CeeDee Lamb. We've made Bryan Edwards a thing. Jalen Reagor gets a lot of push, and like Jerry Jeudy could lead this receiving class in both receptions and yards, like maybe by a lot. Like Jerry Judy's really good. And certainly any injury to Courtland Sutton is going to play well for him. Like he's going to play every snap right away. And he's an absolute technician, but plays well beyond his years. So I'm very excited about Jeudy. I wish I had him in more rosters.
Yeah, I don't really have much exposure to him either. So that'll be interesting to shake out from the Tennessee side of things. I did a Nashville radio hit earlier this morning, and they were like, so what's exciting in Nashville with the Titans? And I was like, I mean, you guys like building on what you did last year. Are you going to make me talk about Corey Davis? Maybe this is the year. Like, it's Derrick Henry. It's all Derrick Henry.
Yeah. I mean, the whole reason that we liked the Tennessee offense for fantasy last year is just three guys. Like Ryan Tannehill was making noise and A.J. Brown was making noise and Derrick Henry scored all the touchdowns. What Tannehill did last year, and Matt Harmon just wrote about it this week, and it really became a constant discussion topic, I think, on Fantasy Football Live toward the end of last year. Like Ryan Tannehill was the off play action last year was the best quarterback who ever lived. Nobody has ever played quarterback as well as Ryan Tannehill off play action in 2019. It's probably not sustainable, but then you can talk yourself into this thing where, I mean, obviously defenses are solely focused on Derrick Henry, and that's not going to change this year. That guy's a monster. That was the key to every good thing that Tennessee did in the passing game last year was really keying off Derrick Henry and play action. Obviously defenses are going to have to adjust to the fact that A.J. Brown is really damn good. We'll see how much, we'll see if his targets really go up this year. They don't need to necessarily for him to have a good season because he's that talented and the offense was that effective. But man, if that guy gets 40 more targets, any regression that you were worried about is just kind of out the window.
It's nil. Yeah. All right. Let's looking ahead to Sunday. Let's make some nutty predictions. Thanks to Planters. Andy, what is your nuttiest prediction for Sunday's games?
Yeah, this is going to be James Robinson. This is going to be Jaguars rookie running back, James Robinson. You mentioned him as an Illinois State product. He was, man, this is a kid that I remember because he set every Illinois high school rushing record there is. I think he has the rushing record. He might have the touchdown record. He was just a dominant high school player here. Really wanted him to go to Iowa. Iowa offered him. Somehow he lands at Illinois State, where he was great, obviously. He dominated at FCS. And now he's fallen into a situation where after the trade of Fournette, Divine Azigbo hits IR, it's going to be him and Chris Thompson, and that's it. So there's a path for James Robinson to get, I don't know, 15, 20 touches in week one. He's going to outscore whatever Leonard Fournette does for Tampa Bay. And I think James Robinson is probably going to finish as a top 20 running back this week.
That is the nutty prediction. James Robinson, undrafted free agent rookie out of Illinois State, Normal, Illinois, I believe, or Carbondale, which one?
Yeah.
Carbondale's
SIU. No, it's Bloomington Normal.
Yeah. Bloomington Normal, that's right. Is going to outproduce Andy's favorite running back of all time, LSU product, Leonard Fournette in week one. That's a hot take. I dig it. It's nutty indeed. Mine is, I believe that Rob Gronkowski will outscore the rest of the Tampa Bay pass catchers. And here is why. Tom Brady, what's the, I mean, this is not new news, but what is the way to get after Tom Brady? What's the way to make him skittish? You try to rush him, right? He's not a mobile guy. He's a 43-year-old guy who really doesn't want to get hit. That's how he plays quite frequently. The line in Tampa Bay, fairly unproven. Sure, it's new, but there hasn't been a huge offseason, and I don't know if they've gelled yet. Their opponent, the New Orleans Saints. What do the New Orleans Saints have? One hell of a pass rush. I think they're going to get after Tom Brady. You've got Mike Evans, who is your prototypical red zone threat with a giant catch radius. He's a little bit banged up. Also, doesn't have the rapport with Brady that Rob Gronkowski does. Will Rob Gronkowski stay together and stay durable for the bulk of the season? Probably not, but it's week one and I'm not worried about it right now. I think that Tom is going to feel the pressure. He's going to pass to Gronk in the end zone. Gronk's going to spike twice. And that is how we open week one of the 2020 season. There's nothing more 2020 than that prediction, by the way.
Man, and then like, I think you're throwing Gronk on the trade block right away.
Oh, heck yeah. The rest of their schedule is bad. I mean, it is rough. Yeah. It is not a great schedule. But if you can get all of the lemmings to believe that Gronk is back and this is what's happening, go ahead and move him. It is a little concerning, I should add, that Mike Evans is dealing with a little bit of a soft tissue situation as well. So he's already a little bit hampered. And I'm not sure that the rapport is fully ingrained yet, as it shouldn't be because of the, you know, offseason, even though Tom's been having his, you know, special Camp Tampa Brady event.
He's fully hydrated. He's taken all those whatever the TB12 supplements are. I don't really know that lifestyle very well.
I don't either, but those were some pretty nutty predictions. What can you say? We are a bit nuts. Thanks again to Planters, and we remind you at home or wherever you are, stay satisfied with Planters. All right. What are you working on? Anything between now and Sunday, or will you be able to watch some football and relax and prep for week one of FFL?
Oh, hell yeah, I'll be watching football. And I, like you, will be locked in a rehearsal all day tomorrow, getting ready for another season of FFL. I'm excited about it.
Yeah, that is what we both have on tap next. Be sure to tune into Fantasy Football Live 90 minutes before kickoff on Sunday. We will be with you throughout the fantasy season for 16 straight weeks, God willing. This year is very exciting that we do have a virtual set, which is why we're going to be locked into an hours long rehearsal. Everybody is recording from home, but we've changed the set. We've changed the format. We've added new segments. I think you're really going to like it. I know I'm excited. I'm pretty sure Andy is too. And at least he's going to say so right here. So you can follow me.
Oh, it looks awesome, actually. It's going to be really fun. Tomorrow's going to be fun.
It does.
Sunday's going to be a blast. Yeah.
I think Sunday is going to be really fun. I'm going to miss not being in the studio with everybody, but it'll be fun to like chat football and kick it back. So I want everyone to make sure you've downloaded the Yahoo Fantasy app and check that out. Also, we've got podcasts. Lord, do we have podcasts at Yahoo Sports. You should check out the Yahoo Sports NFL podcast with Charles Robinson and Therese Paylor, the Yahoo Sports College podcast with Den Wetzel, Pete Thamel, and Pat Forty. Our podcast is 5 days a week. Me and Andy every Friday is the best one. That's the one you need to listen to. We're going to prep you for the weekend. Follow us on Twitter at Yahoo Fantasy. I'm at LizLoza_FF. That is at Andy Behrens. One more thanks to Planters. Week one, it is here. Matt Harmon and I will recap it all for you first thing on Monday morning. And for right now, whew, we're out.